male-dominated field, fighting gender stereotypes and breaking glass ceilings, then securing her throne by kicking other women off Progress Mountain before feasting on their carcasses. She was a constitutional lawyer, anti-feminist, and all-around hate-filled human who makes Annie Wilkes look like Florence fucking Nightingale. The good news is Phyllis Schlafly is dead. But before you tap dance on her grave, we have to deal with the heinous stuff she did that is still not fixed. Like the Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA, which would have been a constitutional guarantee of equal rights for women in the United States had she not stopped it from being passed. The ERA was ratified by 35 states and was on track to get the 38 states it needed to make the Constitution a cooler, older dude. Like the kind of grandpa who used to be a staunch conservative but then started surfing and now he gives you weed. America was on the gender track to equality. Then Phyllis Schlafly came riding through town on her hell horse, Stop ERA, waving her villain's torch, warning the ERA would take away the dignity and role of homemaker for women. Which makes no sense if you look at Phyllis's own mother, who single-handedly supported the family during the Great Depression while her father struggled with years of unemployment. My mom played her Tears for Fears record ad nauseam when I was a kid, and even though I wanted to listen to Stray Cat Strut, I didn't devote my adult life to legislating all copies of songs from the big chair be burned in a public fire. TGPSID. Thank God Phyllis Schlafly is dead. But there are others like her. Women like Renee Elmers, who became famous for a second when, as representative of North Carolina in 2014, she begged Republican men to make their messaging to women clearer. Here's what she said.
We need our male colleagues to understand that if you can bring it down to a woman's level and what everything she is balancing in her life, that's the way to go.
And what everything that she is balancing in her life. Cool sentence, bro. It's too easy to make fun of her for going all word crazy and using what with reckless abandon.
It's too easy.
I do elevated comedy, like reading her for keeping scalloped necklines alive and kicking. Renee, scallops are for old rich people without teeth to eat, not for decorating jacket lapels. Her overall point is, hey, male politicians, talk to women like we're dumb because we're busy. Or we're dumb and busy. We can't balance the triplets on our hips, marinate the chicken, put our hair in a French braid, do the dog's pedicure, and concentrate on debt ceiling PowerPoint presentations filled with conservatively biased data. We've got shrinky dinks in the oven! Renee objected to a provision in the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which is also my drag name, that would allow a woman seeking an abortion after 20 weeks gestation to have the procedure if she was a victim of rape or incest. Renee said, no, 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 lady. You'll give birth to a criminal's baby and raise it, and that's that. Not only is Renee putting trauma icing on top of an agony cake, but also forcing the victim to be connected to the person who assaulted her forever. I've never been in this situation, but I can't imagine it's pleasant to drop your daughter off at your rapist's house for his custodial visits. So, you see what kind of politically powerful, high-profile women to look out for. But what about your mom's worst friend, Deborah? You know this type of lady. All you want to do is relax from the plane, snuggle with Fleba McIntyre, your mom's 14-year-old incontinent beagle, and drink wine out of a glass that holds an entire bottle of alcohol. But you can't, because Deborah's there. She walks in without knocking, in her loud, colorful clothes and chunky necklaces, giving her the illusion of being a laid-back, fun-loving wine spritzer kind of gal. A go-with-the-flow kind of lady who doesn't mind if dinner plans change from fancy steakhouse to cheap hamburger joint. She's just there for the company. A woman just as comfortable in a Pier 1 as she is on an actual pier. But don't be fooled. She asked your mom for your flight information and hopped in her golf cart so she could be there the minute you arrive to get the scoop on how awful your life is since you ran away from Texas. Her thinly veiled questions. Now, how can you do improv at night and get a full night's rest for your job as a real estate receptionist? And bars are open till 4 a.m.? Certainly you've just heard that, right, Aaron? You're not going to those places. They're just small little judgments she's serving before she lays it all on the table after dinner. Aaron, you have got to get serious and find a nice smart man before no one wants you anymore. Then she looks at your mom and says, Veronica, I've never had bread pudding this good. There are so many your mom's worst friend Deborahs out there. Suzanne Vanker is my favorite example of this kind of peeking over the hedges type of woman. I mentioned her briefly in the Me Too chapter, but let's dig in a little deeper. Suzanne is a politically correct, hating, cultural critic and writer, out there bravely challenging the cultural norms with her endless supply of FoxNews.com essays. Brave essays like, I'm so happy Trump's not a feminist. Are you weak if you make your man a sandwich? This is why real men don't marry feminists. Chivalry is dead because women killed it. Most men just want a woman who's nice. It isn't men who are toxic, it's women. I think there's a pattern here. Suzanne's lust for undermining women, probably from a safe little perch in her colonial-style home, with her golden retriever sound asleep on a buffalo check bed, a fire roaring, and a hot cocoa screensaver on her TV screen, wrapped in a cashmere throw, filling the time she's not worrying about those Orvis winter socks arriving before hunting season. Your mom's worst friend Deborah went to college to write the next cold sassy tree, but got sidetracked with her MS degree and ended up a kept woman mad at the loud women fighting for something greater than coordinating separates. Don't come to your mom's worst friend Deborah whining about your clinical depression. She'll tell you to work harder. It'll make you wonder why your mom keeps inviting her over in the first place. How is it possible to base a friendship off affinity for Robert Mondavi Merlot? They're bored, rich moms with an outlet for their sad anger. Moms like Susan Patton, a.k.a. Princeton Mom, who in 2013 wrote an open letter to the Daily Princetonian, her alma mater school newspaper, with advice for the daughter she never had. Advice to pick a man pronto, because they'll never be surrounded by such quality stock of cock ever again. Susan argues in her letter that, as freshman women, you have four classes of men to choose from. Every year, you lose the men in the senior class, and you become older than the class of incoming freshman men. So by the time you're a senior, you basically have only the men in your own class to choose from. And frankly, they now have four classes of women to choose from. Maybe you should have been a little nicer to these guys when you were a freshman. Translated into an equation, it looks like this. Four classes of men divided by years in school plus the number of times you smiled equals potential husbands. Susan rode her wave of internet virality and followed up with a little Valentine's Day straight talk, focusing on the post-grad working professional woman who is not spending enough time investing in finding a husband. It starts out with my favorite opening of an essay ever. Another Valentine's Day. Another night spent ordering in sushi for one and mooning over Downton Abbey reruns. Smarten up, ladies. Oh my God, I mean, jokes on Susan. She just perfectly described my ideal evening. You know what I did this Valentine's Day? I gave my dog a full body massage and got wasted on hot toddies. Then I rewatched Chef's Table Season 3 while my husband went to the Korean spa. And I'm happily married. Oh my God. Your mom's worst friend Deborah's don't understand nuance at any level. They're grasping at the idea of traditional relationships because they're filled with bitterness, and it's not your responsibility to be the laundry basket for their misery towels and shame socks. Get a therapist, Deborah. And next time YMWFD tries to give you advice at your dad's luau-themed birthday party, put your hand on her shoulder and say, I'm sorry your life is sad, Deborah. And then light a joint in front of her face and do not break eye contact. At least with Bizarro Gloria Steinem or your mom's worst friend, Deborah, they're pretty upfront about what kind of people they are. But not that lying bitch. No, that lying bitch is all smiles and says all the right things to make you think she's on your side. Like impassioned sentiments about women's health and pleas for sisterhood. But for real, she's an absolute sociopath. Which is fine when she's your friend's mimosa-addicted cousin from Cincinnati crashing brunch. Who cares? The only thing you lose is 4 hours of your life listening to a 33-year-old woman insisting she slept with Usher. But when she's in the White House, there's a lot more at stake. Ivanka Trump, as you may or may not know, is the special assistant to the U.S. president, a title no one has ever had because it's as made up as any statistic her father has ever referenced. I guess her job is to trick her father into not doing the worst things while also allegedly working on female bolstering initiatives. But so far she's accomplished nothing, which might be too harsh to say. Let me rephrase that. She's done everything she can with the shallow well of courage she was born with. Let me explain something about Ivanka. She has the wettest teeth of anyone I've ever seen. Her lips move around on them like two children on a slip and slide. I want you to keep that in mind as I do her voice. Ivanka is a complicated person who grew up in a world none of us could imagine. In her book, The Trump Card, Playing to Win in Work and Life, she writes about how her dad arranged to have Michael Jackson watch her dance in a high school production of The Nutcracker. My dad used to hang from our apricot tree and say, "Me, monkey man, me, shake fruit." And my sister and I would scurry across the ground like rats, using our mouths to pick up the fruit he shook off the tree. Ivanka operates on a different plane of existence than the rest of us rodent cosplayers. Her money and pseudo-status allow her to be a hypocrite. She can talk about the importance of American jobs while manufacturing her clothes overseas. She can express sympathy for the terrorism victims in Barcelona, but ignore domestic terrorists in Charlottesville. She can talk about reproductive care while her dad rolls back birth control coverage. Let me just say something real quick to the three straight guys listening to this book. Birth control is necessary because I am tired of cum in my belly button. All of us want it on the inside. Ivanka expresses the importance of paid maternity leave while giving none to her own employees. She rallies to close the gender pay gap, then publicly supports her father as he ends Obama's initiatives to eradicate said gap. She talks about how damaging sexual assault is while ignoring the fact that her father likely raped her mother and attacked any number of women, including a 13-year-old girl who filed a civil suit claiming she was attacked by Donald Trump at an orgy in the home of registered sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. But blaming Ivanka's wealth for her lack of follow-through is too easy. She hasn't done shit because Ivanka Trump is a conniving, soulless skag. If my dad publicly called me a piece of ass, or told The View if I weren't his daughter, he'd be dating me, I would have taken my millions of dollars out of my personal bank account and dedicated my life to destroying my father. One time I was at dinner with my dad and the waitress said, "And what will your girlfriend be having to drink?" And he was about to order for me and I was like, "No, no, 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 I'm not doing this Woody Allen, Roman Polanski bullshit one-act play with you tonight." But it doesn't even affect her. It can't affect her. She's a perfect Trump Jr. Sorry, not sorry, actual Trump Jr. Emotionless, ruthless, and willing to lie to protect her shitty empire. An empire built on footwear suspiciously similar to Italian shoe designs and books filled with other people's TED Talks. What person does all that and then is willing to be a scapegoat for her father's bad behavior? She just stands there while he says things like, "How could I be sexist? I made her." Or, "How can I hate the Jews? She fucks one." She feels nothing. She is the Terminator. And for bucking gender norms, you go, girl, I guess. Sure, Ivanka's a liar and a schemer and an opportunist, but the worst thing about her is she is fucking boring. On her Instagram, she writes about the things she claims to be passionate about, with the verve of a sloth coming out of a coma. She repeats the same sentence over and over again on her Instagram account. "Listen for the wet teeth. It was an honor to attend the first robotics competition. Honored to lead the United States delegation to this year's Global Entrepreneurship Summit. It was an honor to meet the Medal of Valor recipients." But you know what people who truly care do? Use different words. I'm passionate about my dislike of Ivanka Trump, and it's a real passion. So I can come up with names for her like Flesh Stiletto. What an American Express Platinum card would sound and look like if a wizard brought it to life. Little Ava Braun. Marzipan Gams. Walking Blood Diamond. Arian Crayola. Complicity Huffman. Shiksa von Swastika. And I can come up with all these different words because they're not manufactured sentiment. So when you see her fake-ass social media presence and her counterfeit compassion, remember, she means none of it. She probably doesn't even write it. I bet she pays a dead-eyed 16-year-old Deerfield boarding student to run her Instagram in exchange for a carton of Dunhills. The point is, Ivanka might look like a Barney's mannequin with the vocabulary of a 10-year-old nerd, but here's who she really is. She's the ice queen who tells you, you're not good enough to be in the first row at SoulCycle. Who after class looks at you and says, maybe you should stick to Zumba. That's who she really is. But let her keep lying. Let Suzanne Venker write her garbage. Let Phyllis Schlafly's ghost float around Stone Mountain. We don't need them to change the way they are. We need better women to replace them. Since the election of Donald Trump, an avalanche of women have kickstarted their political careers. According to Emily's list, as of spring 2018, over 21,000 women have signed up to run for office. That's half a Lilith Fair! It's exciting! But we need all of you to run and be bold. Dana Nessel, who is running for Michigan State's Attorney General office, made an amazing ad posing the very serious question. Who can you trust to not show you their penis in a professional setting? The candidate without one. And if you're not going to run, you need to get out there and support the women who are. Let's show the world how great women run shit. Chapter 4. Periods don't just ruin panties. They ruin freedom. Here's a biology lesson for the uninitiated. Women between the ages of Shiloh Jolie Pitt and Julianne Moore bleed out of their bottom hole once a month. These blood tears are cried by our no-baby uteruses as a sign to us and to others that for at least another month, we're still eating for one. Periods might sound like a time to celebrate the glorious powers of a woman's nature. Which, if you believe that, good news! You're actually a mythical wood elf. Or a hippie mom, dressed head to toe in string cheese incident crinkle skirt regalia, who throws moon ceremony parties for your embarrassed daughters. In either case, you are free to traipse across the forest floor and make your own fudge cookies and look stupid in green button-down vests. For the real people reading this, be warned. This chapter is full of brutal truths about periods. How much they cost, how much they hurt, the shame, and how little anyone cares. Grab a stiff drink, and then grab another, and then a third. Have a fourth ready just in case. Wheel your CB2 drink card over to your couch or bed, wherever you're listening to this. Have a puke bucket ready and the phone number for poison control. Okay, now you're ready to listen on. Periods can suck a big donkey cock. They can wrap their metaphorical lips around the veiny 18-inch sun-wrinkled dong of a workhorse and go to town. It's all they deserve. For child-free women like me, who would like to remain without babies, the only upside to my period is the sweet relief when it's finally over. I would rip out my own uterus, but then I'd have to deal with menopause, which is the sequel no one asked for. I hate my period so much I pretend it doesn't exist, which means once a month I am randomly attacked by my own body with no warning. Actually, there's lots of predictable warnings, but I choose to ignore them. The only good thing my period has done for me is to provide me with a lifetime prescription to Tramadol, which curbs my body crippling cramps and helps me get through small talk at lame Hollywood dinner parties. I can't begin to describe how much easier it is to get through being talked at by a guy who can't shut up about his Eric Roberts horse friendship movie when I'm high on pain pills. I'm actually suddenly interested in what the stranger is droning on about. Oh, yeah! You should cast Paula Patton as the love interest. Maybe put a racetrack explosion in Act 2. I found tramadol when I went to my doctor and described my symptoms, and he knew just what I needed and wrote a prescription. Just kidding. Doctors don't understand period pain. It was a Saturday, and I was crumpled up like a dirty, soaking wet towel on my bed, begging God to have some mercy and let me die. Then I remembered something important. I called my ex-husband, who had just recovered from spine surgery. Back surgery is no joke, and neither were the meds they gave him. Over the phone, I whispered something about help and pills, and he came over as fast as he could. Michael laid them all out on my doorstep like a blackjack dealer and ran away. He'd been married to me. He knew what was happening inside. A feral catwoman crawling out of bed and walking on all fours to the front door. And I do mean crawl. My cramps are so intense, it hurts to stand up or straighten my body. John Gilbaud, a professor of reproductive health at University College London, said periods can feel almost as bad as having a heart attack, which is why I was dragging myself, hands and knees, to my front door, where five beautiful 300-milligram tramadol waited patiently for me in a Ziploc bag. In 40 minutes, I was a functional human being thanks to someone else's synthetic narcotics. Armed with my new street knowledge, I asked my primary care doctor for tramadol. I told him, I have terrible cramps, and this is what works. And he wrote me a prescription, which he continues to write every year without offering another solution, because he doesn't have one. And not one gynecologist has ever asked me about my menstrual pain management. No one asks because they don't have the answers. Scientists and pharmaceutical companies aren't doing research on period pain, so doctors don't know how to treat it. North Shore University Director of Gynecological Pain, Frank Tu, told Quartz, some physicians are taught that ibuprofen should be good enough. Ibuprofen isn't strong enough to treat anything. Taking ibuprofen for my period cramps is like throwing a cup of water on the sun. Richard Legro at Penn State College of Medicine found evidence that Viagra could treat cramp pain, but no one will fund more research. He said, I've applied 3 or 4 times, but it always gets rejected. I think the bottom line is nobody thinks menstrual cramps is an important public health issue. Well, half the population thinks it's an issue, but there's this problem we have where doctors take our pain less seriously. So who will listen? I felt a glimmer of hope about a tiny pain-fighting device you can wear on your belt. It's called Livia, and it uses small adhesive pads placed on your belly to stimulate your nerves and somehow block the pain from reaching your brain. It sounds kind of like electroshock therapy for your ovaries, but it beats my old method of hooking jumper cables up to my labia and revving the engine. Livia can be yours for $149, but as San Fran OBGYN Jen Gunter points out on her blog, she's been prescribing them for years under their non-sexy name, TENS units, which you can get right now online for only $35. They're not as flashy or cool as the Livia. Livia looks like fun lady stickers, and the TENS unit looks like something ghost hunters use to detect energy vortexes. But it's certainly a cheaper investment. I bought a TENS unit. Does it work? Maybe. I'm so afraid of not taking my new pain medicine called Duexis, I can't conduct a thorough experiment. But if it doesn't work, I only lost $35. I do use it on my sore muscles after I work out. Does it work for that? Who knows? It definitely does something. If someone can come up with a foolproof cure for menstrual pain, they could charge whatever they want and will buy it. They'll be so rich, Saudi princes will look like little orphan Annie. The legalization of weed is attracting all kinds of medicinal research, and a lot of companies are focusing on menstrual relief. Cannabis companies are investing heavily in products for pain relief, but I'm less enthused by this future. Last time I went to my weed store, I had to talk to a blitzed dude about what they had for period pain. He told me about THC plus CBD vaginal suppositories. Well, I bought them, and I used them, and then I found out, a year later, they're not approved for internal use. What is the THC and CBD suspended in? I don't know because it's not listed on the company's website. What did I shove up my pussy? Coconut oil? Petroleum? Crisco? Is it shocking that a company cashing in on the menstrual pain market run by two dudes assumed that we're so desperate for pain relief we'd shove anything up there? Anyway, it's been up there for 2 years and still occasionally emits a high-pitched beep. I'm sure it's fine. Although it's weird that the sound summons birds. While I'm prepared to spend however much it takes at the weed store to manage my shark week, women shouldn't be forced to rely on a dispensary for help navigating their menstrual pain. Potshop employees should know the differences between indicas and sativas. They shouldn't be forced to become our period pain shamans. Being counseled about my crimson waves by a dude in a Rick and Morty t-shirt just seems like a phenomenal misuse of human resources. That guy should be free to do whatever he does best. Sharing socialist memes on Reddit or whatever he does. And I should have a fucking period pain cure by now. We're groping in the dark for a period fix that should already be FDA approved. And women are spending far too much money looking for that relief. It's not just period pain that's expensive. So are the tampons and pads we shove up our meaty paper towel tubes. If dudes had periods, tampons would be free in public restrooms like toilet paper already is. Tampons would be displayed in brandy snifters or in a hollowed out football signed by a football hero who never abused dogs or women. These manpons wouldn't be housed in a janky 1982 vending machine covered in rust that only takes physical quarters, and men would never have to shove a Reagan-era rock-hard column of petrified cotton up their manginas as their only recourse to stop the bleeding from ruining their boxer briefs. These manpons certainly wouldn't be taxed like tampons. Absorb this! Tampons are subject to sales tax in 38 states because they are not classified as medical necessities. Name something you bleed into that's not a medical necessity. And don't say Edward Cullen's mouth, okay? It doesn't count. The medical necessity label is an arbitrary classification made by, I don't know, a tax code drunk who is bad at his job but can't be fired because he's got dirt on a higher up. I mean, that's the only explanation I can think of for why some dandruff shampoos, lip balms, and condoms are classified as medical necessities and are therefore tax exempt. A horny, flaky-scalped, lizard-lipped man gets a free tax ride, but I have to pay an extra 9% to soak up my monthly nightmare on Panty Street? Uh-uh. Even some cotton balls are tax exempt. Qu'est-ce que la différence, tax code? A tampon is just an orgy of cotton balls climbing a gym class rope up into my crampy vagina. Tampons are subject to sales tax because they're considered a luxury item. You know, private jets, infinity pools, super absorbency tampons. Ah, I can't think of anything more luxurious than shoving a glorified sponge to stop my gushing lower mezzanine. It's not hard to eliminate the tampon tax. It's so easy. Canada did it, and they need the money. What kind of industries do they even have? Carly Rae Jepsen? Terrible pizza? Apologies? Canada got rid of their tampon tax in 2015, but in the United States, progress on this issue is a slow drip down the leg of justice. 12 states don't tax tampons, but 5 of them don't have sales tax anyway. Now you're left with 7 states, with Illinois and New York the latest to jump on the toll-free jumbo tampon expressway. But take California, where I currently bleed. Tampon tax revenue is so substantial, when Governor Jerry Brown had the chance to eliminate the tax in 2016, he said the state couldn't afford to lose it. I can think of much better ways to contribute to California's bottom line. Idea number 1. Tickets for people who get in fights in the West Hollywood Whole Foods parking lot. Last week, I saw two men screaming at each other, one of them holding a half gallon of juiced wheatgrass. The fight looked like it was over something important, but was probably over whether or not coconut oil pulling actually fights gingivitis. They should make these yoga clowns have to pay for this public disturbance. Idea number two. Fines for every tourist who stops me at the Grove and asks, where does a Kardashian shop? Right now I'm teaching them a lesson and sending them to American Girl Place, which I consider to be the most frightening spot in Los Angeles. While these unsuspecting tourists slowly realize they don't want to be in there, they'll spend a frantic half hour trying to find the exit, surrounded by hundreds of dolls, leering intensely with their overly dilated, painted-on pupils. Stare at them long enough and a shiver will run down your spine. Stay too long and fall prey to their bloodthirst. Idea number three. Jail time for people at parties who talk about whether or not they're eating bread right now. Not only would this new tax revenue line California's pockets, but it would also make my day-to-day life 80% more palatable. There's no way to track what California does with the roughly $20 million they make annually in tampon taxes. I'm not sure I want to know. I already hate so many things about California. The lack of resources for the homeless, the chronic fires, the cost of living, Russell Brand showing up essentially naked in my hot yoga class. I don't need another thing on that list. Women in the UK found out that 250,000 British pounds collected from their tampon taxes were going to Life, an anti-choice group that, along with 69 other women's organizations, won a bid for funding. Women protested and gathered signatures to have the money revoked. But the government assured everyone that Life promised to use the money to help women in need and not spread their anti-choice platform. Okay. I don't believe them. What are they going to do? Lead low-income women inside while instructing them to pay no attention to the posters of a crying Jesus floating over fetal tissue? If Life wants to keep tampon tax money flowing in, they better get on board the pro-choice wagon or they're going to be out of business with all those non-menstruating pregnant women running around. The money state governments make is microscopic compared to what the tampon companies are bringing in. Tampax, Kotex, and Playtex are all getting large cuts of the $15 billion tampon industry without specifically talking about or showing what their products do. Kotex ran a revolutionary campaign making fun of tampon commercial tropes, tampons soaking up blue liquids, and periods preventing us from doing what we love most, frolicking in lavender fields and flying kites. But in their efforts to make fun of the ways commercials dance around this biological function, they too avoided using the words vagina or blood, two main components of Operation Menstruation. If I have to be subjected to a Lamisil commercial where a purple and yellow animated toe fungus with the voice of a New Jersey cigar dad props open a toenail like a car hood and crawls inside like a worm, tampon companies should be able to run commercials like this. Interior, bathroom, midnight. A sleepy woman shuffles into the bathroom. She pulls down her leggings and plops her unshaven thighs on the toilet and shuts the door. The dog scratches frantically on the other side. The woman thrusts a wad of toilet paper between her legs, then pulls it up to reveal gobs of body marinara. She sighs, then leans down to reach under the sink. She opens the cabinet door, leaving a bloody fingerprint on the corner. She uses her blood-free hand to pull out a humidifier, nail polish remover, Epsom salt, and a crusty vibrator she's been looking for. Then she finds it. A half-open tampon, barely clean. She blows hair and dust off and shoves it into her tired vagina. She wipes her hands on the red floor mat, leaving no visible evidence. She flushes the toilet and opens the door. Off to the kitchen to find leftover muscle relaxers. The dog rushes in and licks the bloody fingerprint. Fade to black. In 2013, Tampax released a new line of tampons, Tampax Radiant. They don't glow in the dark or come packed with a nuclear core reactor. They do something much more impressive. According to their website, Tampax Radiant tampons are protection you can keep secret because of the redesigned discreet wrapper that is softer and quieter. Oh, a quiet wrapper? Great! Perfect for all those times I've needed to publicly change my tampon during Hamilton. Also, if you want to see something unimaginable, go to Tampax's website and watch their video on insertion in which two teens penetrate a child's pool floaty with a tampon. All of this is a form of control to keep us entangled in period problems. And it's not just the U.S. government doing this. Period shame is built into religions that view menstrual cycles as spiritually dangerous and the women having them as unclean, keeping girls from going to school and banishing them to a period tent for days, regardless of the weather. In 2017, Nepal tried to outlaw the Hindu menstrual tradition Chaupadi after a woman who was banished to a cow shed during her period was bitten by a snake and died. The same year, a 12-year-old girl in India killed herself after she was shamed for a period stain by her teacher. This is real and a disgusting way to treat a biological function responsible for life. How about instead of sending women to raggedy tents during an intense bodily transformation, we celebrate this beautiful life-giving moment and send women to a menstrual spa where they can wrap themselves in down-filled blankets and watch as many episodes of 90 Day Fiancé as they want. Want a macaroni and grilled cheese sandwich for breakfast? No problem! Want to look at a Crate and Barrel catalog and cry? Go to town! Want to cut your bangs? No, lady, just think about it for a second. There are women here to help. Jennifer Weiss-Wolf's book, Periods Gone Public, is a great resource if you want to learn everything you ever wanted to know about your body. If you're in a major city or a smaller city with a large population of socialists driving Volvos running on vegetable oil, you can get one-on-one or group counseling with a period coach. They're sort of like a baseball coach, except they're only concerned with home plate. Erica Chidi Cohen of Loom in Los Angeles sat me in a comfy chair, led me through a light meditation, then calmly explained all the functions of my menstrual cycle to me. The whole session was very emotional. First, I felt so dumb for not knowing this stuff. Then I was angry a gynecologist had never discussed any of this with me. By the end, I was just happy someone took the time to help me understand my own body. She got me to track my period with the free app Clue, so I know what's happening with my hormones now and how they're affecting my brain and my body. All vacations are now planned around my period. If you see me anywhere else but LA, you can bet I'm not bleeding. The other cool thing about the app is you can share your cycle with anyone who won't use the information against you. Oh, babe, you're premenstrual? No wonder you're pissed I left my wet towel on your work clothes. Erica also showed me how to use a menstrual cup. I use the brand Salt, which I was so afraid of before because I could not conceptualize how I shoved a little plastic orange juice cup-looking thing into my vagina. But now I'm jamming it up there like a pro. Plus, I'm taking money away from tampon manufacturers, which makes me giddy. Periods are punk as fuck and our bodies are fucking magic. I refuse to stand by while people villainize my miraculous blood time or charge me extra for it. When I go to Starbucks, I tell them my name is Menstruation, and then I proudly pick up my venti iced tea with extra water and light ice and saunter out like I fucking own the world. When I'm hiking up Runyon Canyon with cramps and I see some lazy man winding up the hill, I kick him in the shins and scream, "If I can bleed up this hill, you can walk up it, weenus." Come on, everybody! Feel your menstrual joy! Let's make period stigma like dial-up modems and Will Smith seeming happy. Ancient fucking history. Chapter 5. Bankrupting the Makeup Men. When I tell you I grew up poor, I don't mean it in the way most white people say it. Like, they had to share a bathroom with an older brother, and their first car was their bank manager mom's 10-year-old Nissan Maxima. My family was selling homegrown green beans off of I-40 on a Saturday, poor. Spanked for draining perfectly hot bathwater, poor. Merry Christmas, your present is continued health, poor. Certified pre-owned wardrobe, poor. But somehow my mom found extra cash to buy herself Lancome makeup. In the early 80s, the makeup line wasn't the dollar bin brand it is now. Wearing Lancome meant you were rich. and knew a French word other than Jean Nate. Every year, my mom would buy 3 expensive Lancôme items, foundation, eyeshadow, and lipstick, which in our below-the-poverty-line world doubled as blush. She would put on her face like a glamazon and go to work to the pet store where she fed live baby bunnies to snakes. And I think it's beautiful that the last thing those sweet little furballs saw was my mom's perfectly applied $40 eyeshadow. I grew up thinking makeup made women better, more beautiful, worthy of love. It allowed us to transcend our station in life. I might have just eaten a $5 Trader Joe's lentil wrap in a gas station parking lot, but my brow filler says I had $45 crab claws and a glass of lightly effervescent rosé at Chateau Marmont. And while I totally accept that makeup is a tool of oppression wielded by the patriarchy to make us conform to normal beauty standards, I also think makeup is fun. I love the way I look when I have it on. I love filling in my eyebrows, changing the shape of my eyes, putting subtle glitter on my cheeks. The Buddhist monks have their sand art. I have satin jewel tone eyeshadow palettes. Spending hours getting the blending right only to wash it off in the shower 5 hours later is an exercise of the transitory nature of material life. Makeup is a personal choice, and I would never judge another woman for the amount of cosmetics she puts on her face. What I do have a problem with is who is getting rich off our beauty bucks. One day, high on sativa lemonade, I was applying my NARS Train Blue lip pencil, a dark, almost black lipstick that makes people not talk to me at the airport. I was having all sorts of deep thoughts about who would invent such a bold color, and then what genius had the idea to put it in a pencil. And then I wondered, who owns NARS? Turns out, men. And they own almost all the other major cosmetics companies, too. This wasn't always the case. In the beginning, the beauty market was a closed circle. Women paid women for their cosmetics. Beauty industry titans like Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden were swimming in cash before it was legal for them to vote. By convincing the women of the day to look and smell like a fancy harlot, they kick-started a new brand of mini-empires that grew into the completely recession-proof $95 billion industry it is today. These female queens of cosmetics made tons of money, but instead of building brands their daughters could run, sold their companies, went public, or died without a will that would ensure the business fell into the soft, well-manicured hands of a woman. I should have known the industry was run by men. The signs were there all along. In college, I worked at the Estee Lauder counter at Macy's at the Willowbrook Mall. So off I went to the required one-day training session taught by Estee professionals, involving 8 full hours of learning fake scientific phrases like concentrate matrix and synchronized recovery. We got a free, delicious lunch consisting of a soggy ham sandwich and off-brand barbecue potato chips. At the end of the day, they handed us plastic bags with our official Estee Lauder uniform, a navy polyester dress with matching lab coat. Polyester layered on polyester is a body-suffocating combo, and the shape made me look less like a makeup artist and more like a joyless universalist wedding officiant. The uniform was not built to accommodate bending over, which was a large part of my job. All of the products were stocked below the counter, and to get them, I had to make a dramatic move, like how screen actresses would faint in the 40s, collected but distressed. I would sit on the floor, side saddle, grab the product, then hop into a squat, rising slowly, keeping my back arched, tilting my pelvis forward so my uniform wouldn't expose my panties to the general public. I did that yoga routine for 2 years. Any woman in a position of power would see how absolutely insane the uniform was and would have ordered them all thrown into a pile, doused in gasoline, then lit on fire while we all watched them melt into a gooey, navy, youth-dew-scented plastic bonfire. But that never happened on account of all the golf cocks dominating the C-suite at Estee Lauder. On their website, Estee Lauder brags about 51% of their senior VP and above positions being held by women. Not impressive. That's the corporate equivalent of getting a D on a test and bragging that it's not an F. In a fair and just world, their corporate org chart would be littered with vaginas. Except for Terrence, their sole male executive, who knows how to contour like a motherfucker and out-smoky eye a raccoon. Estee Lauder CEO Fabrizio Frida is one of the highest paid CEOs in America and the only CEO with the name of an Italian odor eliminator. Giuseppe's dirty football socks are no match for Fabrizio. Grazie, mamma. He's making a cool $48.4 million a year. It's a hard number to conceptualize, so let's break it down in smaller terms. He makes $132,602 a day. He makes $5,525 an hour. $92 a minute. I work 3 minutes a day. Sushi dinner, it's on me. Fabrizio is so rich, he can afford to melt gold coins and throw them into hurricanes. One of the reasons Fabrizio is so stupid rich is because he turned Estee Lauder into a writhing, stinking cosmetic rat king, tangling its tail with Aveda, Bobbi Brown, Bumble and Bumble, Clinique, Jo Malone, La Mer, MAC, Origins, Smashbox, Too Faced, and the company getting most of my money, Le Labo. Le Labo fragrances make me smell like an elderly, rich, Milanese woman who refuses to use a walker no matter the costs. Yeah, I'll break a hip trying to get up that curb, but I'll fill that ambulance with the smell of sandalwood and cedar. Le Labo has this special line inspired by the greatest cities of the world. Not you, Kansas City, you stanky pile of barbecue detritus. And the line is only available for the month of September. Why September? Probably because some number dork at corporate turned in a report showing low sales in September, and then Ethan, their self-proclaimed marketing genius, who just graduated from Harvard Business School, said, this might sound crazy, but I was at One Oak last night mainlining 1982 Chateau Anjali and getting crunk off of Kamamoto's when it hit me. I think people will buy more stuff if we make it impossible to get. And then they clapped so hard they gave themselves hard-ons. Would a woman-owned business do this? No. Women know that our hard days are unpredictable. What if we get laid off suddenly in April, and then in May we find out our boyfriend has a secret girlfriend in Toronto? Maybe by June we need to buy a fucking perfume to have something beautiful in our life for a change. A woman-owned business wouldn't say to us, "Sorry, you'll just have to wait until late fall." Why does male-run, Estee Lauder-owned Le Labo want to keep us from moving on with our lives? In the male-dominated cosmetics world, there's no company quite like Revlon. Their ex-CEO, Lorenzo Delpani, is, in my opinion, the devil's cum stain, and a whole garbage truck of Color Stay Foundation wouldn't be able to cover up his wrongdoings. First of all, he's more than happy to fund his lavish, open-shirted Bugatti lifestyle with sales from Revlon's eyeshadow, a terrible product that only shows up on lid skin after 4,000 applications. The only way I like to see Revlon cosmetics is flattened by an electric wheelchair on the floor of CVS. Their products belong in the city dump, if that's even a thing we have anymore. We might be dumping things directly in the Pacific Ocean these days. No one knows. Secondly, according to a discrimination lawsuit brought by Revlon's top scientist, Alan Myers, Delpani is one of those no-holds-barred assholes who finds unique ways to be awful to everyone. Like ignoring factory safety concerns, forcing Alan to act like a human easel during business meetings, expressing genuine confusion as to why there weren't more Jewish people at Revlon because Jews stick together, which is just slightly less terrible than the allegation that Delpani claimed he could smell black people when they walked in the room. Yeah, you heard that horrific sentence correctly. He said he can smell black people. If Myers is telling the truth, Delpani might not be the world's biggest racist, but he's definitely the most inventive. Who knew a projections expert and outstanding public speaker also has an innovative outlook on racial intolerance? When this all came out in the press, the company denied everything and amicably settled with Myers. Delpani continued on as CEO for another couple of years until he stepped down for personal reasons. And by step down, they mean he's still on the board and is being paid as an advisor. At least Revlon has a 33% female board. Cody, on the other hand, had zero women in their senior management until 2017. They now have one. I know. Who the fuck is Cody, you ask? Turns out they're a massive umbrella company, and according to their website, not only are they dominating the fragrance game, but they're also number 2 for salon color and number 3 in color cosmetics. They own a ton of wildly successful brands. Calvin Klein Fragrance, CoverGirl, Marc Jacobs Fragrance, Philosophy, OPI, Rimmel, Clairol, Wella, Sebastian, Nioxin, and Sally Hansen. It is truly sad there's not a gaggle of women lording over Sally Hansen because she might be my favorite cosmetics heroine. This woman deserves a movie, a good one, where she's played by Cate Blanchett doing her best, I'm indifferent to how much I hate loving you, style of acting. Outside of being a very successful businesswoman at a time when that sort of success would get a bitch burned at the stake, Sally Hansen had 3 husbands and 0 children. The 40s must have been a great time to be a divorced woman without kids. I bet people were super cool about it. Hansen was a regular beauty columnist for the LA Times, where she once penned the iconic line, "Personal charm often is more desirable than startling physical beauty." She was preaching the truth while selling lies. She was yin and yang, fire and water, Dwight Yoakam and Method Man. Oh, and if this amazing list isn't enough for you, one of her best friends was trans. In the 40s! If you gave me a time machine, I would not go back to kill baby Hitler. I would go back to be friends with Sally Hansen. Today, trans friend No Children's beautiful legacy is being run by men. What if women and women exclusively were getting rich off of button downs with anime characters on them, Bud Light mirrors, Deadpool masks, Packers season tickets, and everything else the worst guy from college is spending his stupid money on? Huh? Think about that, and then maybe you can understand my outrage. One straight guy listening to this book because your school is making you do so as punishment? It's not surprising that these traditional, prehistoric companies have such retrograde practices, but if you're thinking newer, emerging companies are any better, you're in for some depressing news. You might know Rihanna's Fenty line, a cosmetics line so inclusive it makes Benetton look like the KKK. They have over 40 different foundation shades and a yellow highlighter that I would punch a toddler in the face for. While it's true Rihanna is the face and founder and blah, 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 blah of the company, the line was actually created by Kendo. Kendo is run by David Solotinu, who used to be the CEO of Sephora. Kendo is run by a man and owned by another male-run luxury beauty company, LVMH, a.k.a. Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy, the world's largest luxury brand umbrella company. Louis Vuitton and Moët joining forces is the luxury brand equivalent of air and water merging. LVMH is run by Bernard Arnault, the 4th richest person in the world and the richest person in France. Full disclosure, I don't like most French people. They're mean as a rule, and when I see a French person smile, I get scared because they're about to do something fucked up. Every minute in Paris that I wasn't eating was a nightmare. I asked a saleswoman at Le Bon Marché, in French, if I could try on some shoes, and she just said, no. Then walked away! I don't like the French, and I don't like a Frenchman sitting on $85.8 billion he made off the hard-earned dollars of underpaid women. What's he going to spend it on anyway? Stuffed goose livers and imperiousness? With essentially every major cosmetics brand lining the pockets of some dude, we are then left with one woman, Kylie Jenner. From my research, it looks like Kylie's lip kit empire is mostly run by women, or just by her and her mom. But who knows how long it'll last? Kris Jenner recently told Women's Wear Daily, "If one of the big ones came along and was to buy Kylie, I think it would be a very exciting time, but also a time for great growth, and it would give Kylie a whole new world to create in." Here's a sentence I thought I'd never say. Please, Kylie, don't sell your cosmetics business. Women need you. The cosmetics industry is hard enough to break into, and you did it, sister! You should also be proud to be the first Kardashian-Jenner to create a valuable product not shot on a camcorder. There's a great Mr. Rogers saying that I'd like to use inappropriately to transition to my next section of thoughts. He said, "When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.'" So let's look for the helpers and buy their eyeliner. Go into your Clinique bag stained with bronzer because it's time to fill it with these wonderful 100% female-owned, conscientious cosmetic lines. Skincare. My Lancome Cream Radiance now lives in my garbage can alongside onion shavings and a DVD of cats. Not only did Lancome founder Armand Petitjean use horse blood in his early moisturizers, Lancome fired sexy weirdo Isabella Rossellini at 42 to hire a younger spokeswoman. Then, in 2016, they hired her back at 63. She told The Cut that a person showed up on a motorcycle, took off their helmet, and long blonde hair fell out. Isabella asked, "What happened?" And the female exec responded, "Things change." And then rode off into the sunset. Now, I don't know if the scenario as described is what really happened, or if a board meeting retelling got put through the Rossellini storytelling machine, but I hope more than anything it's true, because that's the exact life I picture Isabella Rossellini having. Thank God for my friend Jenny Pearson, who told me about oil cleansing. After a hard day in Los Angeles of driving 1 mile in 3 hours, I only had the energy to slop one thing on my face, and it better do everything. So I've been using Marie Veronique's Replenishing Oil Cleanser. I barely use half a pump, and my face is clean and not left stripped. You have to shake it every time to mix up the product, but that just means it's natural. Ever seen a Hidden Valley Italian dressing next to homemade Italian dressing? Hidden Valley never separates because it's bonded by nuclear corporate waste. Marie Veronique isn't just an esthetician. She's got both a math and science degree and was trained to succeed in the ruthless beauty industry by teaching high school chemistry. I know teenagers are now the saviors of America and will destroy the NRA, but when I was in high school, we used to make fun of our chemistry teacher for raising rabbits, so I gotta believe there's still a lot of shitty teens out there. Oh, and when Marie Veronique doesn't want to tinker in her face lab alone, she calls up her daughter, who is a physicist and biomedical engineer, to collaborate. Who would you rather give money to? A millionaire man who makes his money by torturing rabbits with unnecessary makeovers? Or two earth witches harnessing the power of science to gently squeeze skin healing properties out of a delicate rose petal? Toner moisturizer. If you work out to curb your anxiety so you don't chew all the skin off your lips like me, pop Thayer's Rosewater Tonic Wipes, run by CEO Karen Clark, in your gym bag to wipe away all your nasty, acne-causing sweat. And if it's super dry outside because you're living in end times, you can incorporate Beauty Counter's Brightening Facial Oil, which turns my dry, party streamer skin into a dewy, youthful lie. The founder, Greg Renfro, calm down, she's a woman, was furious about the shit ingredients in cosmetics, so she started her own company, which is not only lady-run, but also a certified B beauty corporation. Beauty Counter also functions as a Mary Kay for millennials, meaning you can buy products from your bestie, and then she has a little extra scratch to buy you a vodka tonic. Closed female monetary system. Hallelujah.